Welcome to the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. In this episode, we are recapping everything we saw from the Sunday slate of action in the NFL, which means we had a London game, so it was more than 12 hours of football. We were looking at 15 straight hours of football. That's a lot of football, folks. Connor and I watched it all, and we got the takes. We're telling you what mattered most from each game that we saw in the NFL from Sunday. Takes are going to fly. That's all I'm going to say. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me, as always, is Connor Rogers. Let's ring the bell. Welcome to the opening bell of the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers. Joining you guys on a, well, to be honest, it's a Sunday evening. This is when we're recording the podcast, but you guys are listening to it on a Monday morning as we recap the Sunday slate of the NFL action, which actually started in the AM thanks to the London game. A lot of action happened on Sunday, and what we do on these Monday podcasts are we tell you what mattered most. Connor and I go down the schedule of the Sunday slate, and we give you what we think was the lasting impact. Beyond the box score, beyond the individual stats and performances, we give you some extra PFF data, and we tell you what is going to matter most in the end, from every single game. Connor, how are we feeling tonight, my man?
I'm good, man. You know, I always, to pull back the curtain here, I come home on Sundays from the city, from Jets post game. I rip off my tie, my dress clothes, scarf down food, and we get to do this show, which is a lot of fun. It's a little bit more laid back. It's a little bit more, hey, wide lens is everything that happened this week. And what mattered most to me today had nothing to do with any of these games, but the fact that Mike Leach is getting involved in your wedding plans. For those that did not see, and I'm sure most of you did by now, Trevor's fiance, Alyssa Lang, on Twitter, at Alyssa Lang, interviewed Mike Leach, and it got off the rails into a deep wedding conversation. Trevor, he said he wants to set up a call with you. Is this happening?
No, I mean, it absolutely needs to happen. I need, especially because he said that he offers his kids each $10,000 if they elope instead of going through a big wedding. So,
well, it's look, smart if, by him. It's oh, a long term saver. Yeah.
You know, but look, all I'm saying is, you know, if he's going to throw 10 grand our way to swear a decision, then, you know, that's something that we got to talk about there. No, but it was hilarious. Alyssa actually texted me before the game because, Connor, I don't know if you remember this, but that candy corn answer that he had after a game that went viral last year, Alyssa also asked him that. So she has I think a trend now of asking two good football questions about the game that actually happened. But then if it's obviously kind of a blowout game, which both were, she has a little bit of fun with the last question. Alyssa and I recently got engaged earlier this summer. So she's like, I'm going to ask Leach about weddings because he's been on record before. He's done press conferences and had answers before where he talks about eloping and weddings. And so she ended up getting to do that because the interview was taped. And what you guys saw was the raw, unfiltered thoughts of Mike Leach and what he believes on big wedding and the wedding industry. So that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to see people kind of freaking out about that. But there's no doubt. I gotta get in contact with Mike Leach. The call's got to happen. Maybe we'll share some of the recordings here on this podcast, but it's got to happen.
It was amazing. I think Alyssa is officially she just knows how to pour the right gasoline on the fire that is Mike Leach. Nobody gets him started on a viral rant like your fiance. So that was the most important thing for me for the entire weekend, but we have a full slate of games to get into. Trevor, what do you want to start with today? We have to start with London?
Let's start with the London game. Let's start with the London game because we all woke up. You know, if you live on the East Coast, you woke up around 8:30, and it was only an hour and a half until you got real NFL football. And if you're on the West Coast, well, suck it, because you guys talk to us about having a great football watching schedule all the time. You're like, oh, we get to wake up
and then great call. Great
football. Sunday night football ends and it's only 8 o'clock. I'm always jealous of it. So kind of telling you to suck it here with you having to wake up at 6:30 to catch the London game. But Minnesota Vikings, New Orleans Saints. Vikings end up winning the game 28-25. Thrilling at the very end with Will Lutz hitting not only the upright, but then also the crossbar as well for that field goal to barely go out. Connor, after the game, I said that had to be the best London game ever, right? I feel like we've watched so many London games where the NFL tries to send somewhat of a competitive matchup over there, and it never ends up being a competitive matchup. But this one was fun to watch. So I'll ask you just like the entertainment value of the game, and then also what you kind of saw from this game. What were your big takeaways on this one?
My takeaways are that, well, number one, yeah, it was awesome. You're right. It might have been the best London game ever. I'm sure there's some that maybe we forgot. But in terms of the matchups have been getting better. I know next week we get to see mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers play in London.
Yep.
The Giants have quietly been one of the surprises of the NFL season overall. So look at it like that. It feels like the schedule over there is starting to pick up, which is a really, really good sign for those games. Now, what matters most to me, and I try not to do this very often, but there's part of me that just wonders, is we're going to go through all the teams, right? And there's going to be a lot of 3-1 teams right now. I hate doing this. The Viking fans are not going to like me. Are the Vikings the least inspiring 3-1 team? Like, I came away from that game like, man, you're playing against Andy Dalton. Got by the Lions, and we saw the Lions defense today. We're going to get into that in a little bit, like what we know the Lions defense to be right now. You got really whooped up by the Eagles. There's nothing wrong with that. They're really good. You had a really good week one game against Green Bay, but I just kind of came away from this game like, man, I thought the Vikings were going to be significantly better under O'Connell this year, but I always have my concerns overall about their wins and losses. And I just look at the 3-1 teams right now and I go, man, they have a lot to clean up. And there's nothing wrong with this, but so much of their offense is funneled through Justin Jefferson that if anything ever happened to him, wide receivers get hurt all the time.
Right.
I don't know what they would do. And that's easy to say about a lot of teams, but it's another concern I have as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to look at this game, right? Like for the Vikings, you could say, hey, a lot of our off-script plays weren't really working very well. We weren't moving the ball super well when it was in off-script situations, and I'll get to that in a second. And you could say, well, they still came away with the win, but if you want to be more on the, I'll say, like, pessimistic side, you go, well,
yeah, that's where I am.
The Saints didn't have Jameis Winston. They didn't have Michael Thomas. They didn't have Alvin Kamara. They didn't have Andres Pete. Like, they didn't have all of these players on offense. So, yeah, it probably should have been a little bit easier of a win for the Vikings. But, I mean, the NFL, it's still a close game. It's still close matchups that we see every single week, no matter what. The unique travel, going through so many time zones, a different kind of a week being in London, I think that probably
that's a
evens
really good point.
The playing field a little bit there. I felt like the Vikings this year were going to be a team that was either at 500 or barely above 500. I didn't think that they were going to be this juggernaut this year. And so I still think that they're kind of on pace for that, not just with the 3-1 record, but also, like you said, yeah, their wins. Are you super inspired to pick the Minnesota Vikings every week? No, not necessarily. But I will say that they are doing things well. And Kevin O'Connell is a first-time head coach, so I think that he's figuring a lot of things out. The Vikings are really good on script. I mentioned that they weren't so great off script. And what I'm saying to that is, what I mean by on script is those drives that either open up the game, open up the half, or it's 2-minute drill stuff. So at the end of every half or at the end of the game, they're pretty damn good at those. When Kevin O'Connell can fully script out what he wants to run, the Vikings have shown that they can move the ball pretty well. They got 10 points in the first half on scripted drives, those first and last drives. 2 touchdowns in the opening and end of half versus Green Bay. They had a drive in a field goal range and a touchdown drive at the end of the half versus the Lions. It's just, I feel like week after week, there was only really one week where they weren't able to move the ball the way that they wanted to. But both, I shouldn't say both, it was again today against the Saints, then against Green Bay, and then against Detroit. When it came to those on-script situations, Kevin O'Connell clearly knows how to orchestrate an offense. When we get in between those, late in the first quarter, early in the second quarter, that's when stuff gets a little bit dicey. And that's when, like you said, they really, if they don't get the ball to Justin Jefferson, there's not a lot of balance elsewhere. There's not a lot of other guys stepping up. So they still have to figure that out. But I do like what I see from Kevin O'Connell early, because in those moments when he can really control things, I think things are going well. And I think the head coach journey will bring him to figure out how to be a little bit more consistent in between those scripted situations. So that's kind of what I think about the Vikings. I know a lot of you guys who are listening to this podcast have kind of complained that we haven't had a ton to say about the Vikings, you know, up to this point. So I wanted to give you guys a couple of
extra
minutes.
I guess be careful what you wish for.
On that one. But that's kind of what I think. I like where the Vikings are going. I don't think they're a juggernaut team. Obviously, you're kind of a little bit more reserved on them, I am, but that's what I thought with this game.
Yeah, no, I think it just speaks to, and this is something I talked about with the draft for them for a while, that they really need another playmaker to open things up a little bit for off of Jefferson. And yeah, I think that was a little harsh by me. I think that it's not fair to call them the least inspiring 3-1 team, because actually there is another team that comes to mind. But I just think the Vikings to me are so fascinating, because I find them, as you and I are offseason guys, like we do team building more than anything else. I never really know what they are. I think that's my point with the Vikings. Now I look at them, 3-1 is a really good time, but are they competitive 3-1, as in like a legit contender in the NFC? That's not really overwhelmingly impressive as a whole. I'm still not confident in that answer despite the record, but we don't have to stay too long on the London game. The Saints just have injury problems that are insurmountable at this point.
Yeah.
Trevor, are you cool with going to Falcons-Browns next up?
Yeah, we can do Falcons-Browns next.
Falcons-Browns. The most important thing to me is, and something that I did not expect going into this season, is that the Atlanta run game is for real, in a way that I think they're just really well coached. Honestly, I think it's a really good scheme. Like, I'm looking at an ultimate right now. Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry today, who each had 35 run block snaps, had grades in the 90s. That's remarkable when you look at the impact blocking that they were. Lindstrom himself, who is making a case as one of the best run blocking guards in football right now, had 15 positive graded run blocking plays compared to 4 negative ones. That means he is wildly impacting the game when the Falcons run the ball. And when you just look at the different variety of guys that got carries, Tyler Algier with 10 for 84, Caleb Huntley, yes, Caleb Huntley with 10 for 56. So they had two guys that are almost 6 yards a carry. Tyler Algier was 8.4. Cordarrelle Patterson, 9 for 38, also had a touchdown. I mean, this run game, Marcus Mariota only completed 7 passes and they beat the Browns 23-20. That's a big indictment on Arthur Smith, and he deserves his credit for that.
Yeah, my point kind of about the Falcons as well, because we've said before on this show, it's hard to really get serious about judging the Browns where they are at quarterback. Because if Deshaun Watson was not in the picture and coming back, then you could say like, all right, well, the Browns are probably going to be barely above 500 as a team, probably aren't going to compete with the best in the NFL because Jacoby's probably just not going to take you there. Very talented elsewhere around the roster on paper, but that's just kind of where we are with the Browns, and that's what it's going to be week in and week out. They're going to win some games. You're going to be like, all right, cool. Like, so let's see how many extra games they can win before Deshaun gets
back. Can they tread water?
Right. Or you're just going to say like, oh, they lost. Well, of course, they are starting Jacoby Brissett. So it's a really weird conversation to have about the Browns, and we'll get more detailed into that in different weeks. But I also want to focus on the Atlanta Falcons, because I wanted to make sure that I said this on this show. You know, we're a draft-centric show. So when we look at the Atlanta Falcons, you and I have talked about this before. They're a team that's probably destined for a top 5 pick. We don't think that they're very good. We think that they're certainly in the real rebuilding phase of what that roster is and that regime is right now. But I am okay with this win. You know, normally when we look at things objectively from a draft perspective, we go lose as many games as you can. Get a higher draft pick. Get a better impact player. And yes, that obviously is very important. But I also can't sit here and talk about that winning culture matters and understanding how to win. I can't sit here and say that those things matter and then talk about the Falcons really being able to claw this one out after choking a little bit to start the season in the first couple of weeks, especially that first one against the Saints, and just totally rush that under the rug and be like, oh, they shouldn't have won this game. This is going to bite them in the butt. Maybe it will come back to bite them in the butt. But as of right now, I'm still okay with it. Because Arthur Smith's been under a lot of criticism here early on in the season, and I think for them to win this game was important. Do I wish they got their stars more involved? Yes. Marcus Mariota completed 7 passes in this game. It's got to be a lot more than that if you want to compete against real teams at the top of not just the NFC, but in the NFL in general. But for right now, they ran the ball well. That's clearly what they wanted to do. They were able to achieve the objective that they set forth before the game, and good on them. The defense at the end of the game, a defense that I think is very depleted of talent, really stepped up. Grady Jarrett had a huge sack near the end of the game to show you that he is still one of the good pieces along this defensive line. And then right after that, the very next play, I believe it was Jarrett who had a pressure, which forced the interception, which sealed the game for Atlanta to win it. So I think that there were positive things for Atlanta there. I don't hate the fact that they got the win right now. I think that you need it, especially if you still think that Arthur Smith can be the guy. You needed this win. You needed it to be like this. But moving forward, what matters most, let's get the Stars involved a little bit more, Arthur Smith. Come on. Like, we got to get Kyle Pitts more involved. We got to get Drake London more involved. We got to get Cordero Patterson more involved like he has been in past games that we've seen so far this year. So that's my big takeaway. Didn't hate the win, but it was a win that if you play the better teams in the NFL, you're probably not going to come away with a W the way that you had your identity set up today.
Falcons are going to be an interesting draft team to talk about it. They feel like a good landing spot for one of these young quarterbacks. Arthur Smith, wherever he goes, that team knows how to run the ball. So we will be talking about them a lot. Unless they continue to win too many games, then it's going to be interesting.
Then you get a little dicey.
Then they're not going to be in that quarterback conversation. But two teams that will win a lot of football games this year. It was the battle of two guys that are top five MVP candidates on the board right now, Trevor. That is the Bills and the Ravens. And I think it's safe to say this one lived up to expectations. What is your biggest takeaway in a game that had a lot of drama, especially on the Baltimore side at the end?
My what matters most biggest takeaway from this game is that we will see these teams again at the end of January.
Yeah,
I think that these two teams are playing at the end of January. I think the regular season record and where this game is played at the end of January could be the determining factor for who goes to the Super Bowl. That's really what I think. I think that no matter, depending on where this game is played, that could be the team that represents the AFC in the Super Bowl. And the reason why is because, and it, part of a, you know, a micro deal of kind of what I just said is that the rushing ability of these two quarterbacks, or just the escapability, extendability of what Lamar and Josh Allen are able to do was so prevalent today. It was so on display. Josh Allen led the Bills in rushing yards with 70 yards. And how many times in this game did he pump fake the linebackers at the line of scrimmage, get them to just hesitate or jump, and then boom, he's scooting for 5 or 6 yards to pick up the first down and extend the drive. That's just, he's such a natural.
Same with Lamar.
Right. And right.
Called that 11 carries for 70 plus yards.
And it's just that is the part of their game that I think is so important. Now, Lamar missed on more passes than I wished he would have today. So there were a handful of times when, you know, I think about that Mark Andrews play that was in the end zone where it was a tight throw between where Mark Andrews was going at full speed in the back of the end zone, but you kind of got to hit that one. And there were a couple of other ones to the sideline where he was just trying to feed his receiver a little bit too far to the sideline that kind of either my guy gets it or nobody gets it throws. They were a little bit off target today. I wish he would have been more pinpoint, but there was also some weather in this game. The remnants of Hurricane Ian was coming through in the Baltimore area, also in the Philadelphia area, which we'll get to when we talk about Philly's Jags. And so those things, I think, definitely went into maybe the lack of on-fire passing game that we could have seen from either of these teams. I know a lot of people are going to talk about the decision by John Harbaugh at the end of the game to go for it on fourth down, to go for the touchdown, to go for the dagger. But John Harbaugh talked about it after the game, and he was basically saying, look, if we kick a field goal there, we basically give Buffalo's offense the ability to have four downs to convert every fourth down going all the way down the field to either get into field goal range, which would be easy enough for them, you would think, because we've seen it time and time again, or even worse, for them to score a touchdown and basically take the game out of our own hands and we're forced to play defense for it. So I actually didn't hate the logic of John Harbaugh going for it. I really didn't. Now, the play didn't work out. Lamar sort of gave his guy a chance, but I kind of even didn't like with the position that Lamar put himself in, fading backwards to try to get that throw to, I believe it was Duvernay in the corner of the end zone before it got picked off by Jordan Poyer. So I did not hate the decision. It did not work out for them. Clearly, they lost the game, but I didn't hate the decision. I didn't hate the logic behind it. It just didn't work out for them in this one. But my big takeaway is the rushing ability of these quarterbacks is to the point where they're putting themselves in MVP conversation and they're putting their teams in number one overall seed contention. So that was my kind of point from that one.
I'm with you. And I like that we don't make this show the Monday morning guess every coaching decision. I mean, will we never do that? I can't promise that, but that's not really the point of this show. And that's, sure, you can listen to your local sports talk radio if you want to do that. But listen, I'm with you on both these guys. I think that my sub takeaway, my like little bullet point underneath all of that, and I know Rashad Bateman got banged up, so it might be easy to say it, use it this week. I feel like the Ravens just need an alpha wide receiver. You know why I say that? Because you look at Josh Allen throwing to Diggs every week. You look at Kirk Cousins throwing to Justin Jefferson. You look at Matt Stafford throwing a Cooper Kupp. And those are very extreme examples, right? And Mahomes had Tyreek Hill for all of his career until this year. And then the Chiefs are going to have another big-time receiver in his career lifetime at under center. I think Lamar doesn't have that guy that he can constantly lean on. And for how much he escapes and makes plays, Devin Duvernay is a nice story. He's solid. I think Bateman's going to be a good player. Mark Andrews is, you know, when Mark Andrews is at his best, he's the best pass-catching tight end in the NFL.
Right.
It just feels like this Baltimore offense is missing that dynamic, I can win the ball, I can be a 12-target guy on any given day. And I know they want to be patient to let Bateman become that guy, and I get that. But this is Lamar Jackson in yet another MVP caliber year, and a Lamar Jackson that should be in Baltimore the rest of his career. And I think they're going to find a way to make sure that gets done. But it feels like he is missing his Robin on this team right now.
No, no Batmans. Or no Robins. We're all Batmans.
They're all Batmans.
We're all Batmans.
The Eagles, way. The Eagles could say that. I don't think the Baltimore Ravens can say that. Lamar Jackson is one of the most special players I've ever watched in my years of watching the NFL. For how unique he is.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you partially. I think that Mark Andrews is an absolute stud, and clearly they run their passing offense through him, and he rewards them time and time again. But, as we have also seen so many times throughout the league, right, look at what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done, right? They get Tom Brady, and at the time, they had Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and what did they do? They said, that's not enough. We're going to get Antonio Brown. And when Antonio Brown was out of there, they went, that's not enough. We're going to get Julio Jones.
Russell Gage.
Right. And like all these dudes. And so it's like, you would think to yourself, like, oh, you know, Tom Brady, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin. I mean, like, that's enough. Like, that's going to be incredible right there. But in this league, you can never have too many pass catching weapons. And so I would agree. I still think I would love to see the Ravens, maybe not a first round pick on a wide receiver, but continue to invest in that position, continue to get more dynamic. Get guys that you can lead.
I would go trade for one if one becomes available, like the Eagles did for Jalen Hurts. Like, I think they should be in that mold of like, let's F this first round pick. Let's go get a baller for Lamar Jackson. And they could figure out the money. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting,
hey,
but
DJ Moore's pretty pissed off in Carolina, I feel like.
Done. I mean, work. Should we go there?
I mean,
good segue.
Yeah, sure. We'll go to Carolina next. Carolina and Arizona is the next game that we could talk about here. Arizona, yeah. Cardinals come away victorious, 10-point win, 26-16 in Carolina. Connor, what was your big takeaway and what mattered most?
And you talk enough off air that we have the same one here, but I want you to say it because you logged on the old Zoom machine and laid it down. And I said, man, there's nothing else to say. That has to be the takeaway. So please take the floor.
Somebody else will be coaching both of these teams.
And maybe picking the players on them as well.
I don't know what the fates of Steve Keim and Scott Fitter are going to be, the two general managers for Arizona and Carolina, but I think the head coaches are done. I think Matt Rhule is done. Tom Pelissero had a stat. I got to look it up real quick.
Yeah, you find it. I'll take the wheel for a second.
It's unreal. Yeah, go ahead.
Baker Mayfield with another tough day, 22-36, under 200 yards. The two interceptions, he was sacked twice. It just feels like Baker is just not playing fast right now. And Kyler Murray has not been, you know, the MVP caliber Kyler Murray that they paid him to be. And these defenses, notably both. I think they have young talent on both these defenses, but these teams are just not organized or play ready week in and week out. Trevor, you got the stat?
Yeah, Tom Pelissero tweeted this after the Panthers game went final. Panthers are now 1-26 under Matt Rhule when the opponent scores at least 17 points, including 24 losses in a row. There are only so many times when you can say to yourself, oh yeah, but next time, you know, next game,
no, you deserve better, Panthers fans.
It's coming up soon. Panthers fans are great people. I know a lot of really great Panthers fans who are very passionate about their team, and I do think that they deserve better. Now, I don't think that Matt Rhule is the only one who is under fire here. Look at what the Panthers, I think, have done. They went bargain shopping with Sam Darnold. It failed. They went bargain shopping with Baker Mayfield. It failed. I think a lot of the offensive construction that they have had on their team falls on not just Matt Rhule, but also Scott Fitterer and also David Tepper, the owner as well. I do not think that he is blameless in this because no. I know he's an active owner. He has his hand in a lot of things. He lets those guys manage the team, but he's definitely involved. And, you know, I think that this is a really hard lesson for David Tepper to learn as the owner, because he is a relatively new owner with Carolina. And that is, it's the old truth. There's two types of teams in the NFL, right? Teams that have a franchise quarterback, teams that don't. That's it. Once you start bargain shopping for quarterbacks, and we can get to the Indianapolis Colts next if we want to, but the Colts have done the same thing. Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, they're just in purgatory, just trying to rent quarterbacks for a cheaper price and get by. And sometimes the situation doesn't lend itself to anything better than that, but I feel like Carolina has had the chance to get aggressive. I know they went after Deshaun Watson and it failed on him, but it just they have dug their own grave here. Matt Rhule has dug his own grave. I think Carolina, you got to move on from your. I mean, they were barely getting DJ Moore the ball before this week, and he led the team in targets this week. Yeah, he had 11 targets. They were like, okay. And so they got DJ Moore the ball a little bit this week, but it didn't matter. 6 catches, 50 yards. They end up losing by 10. On the other side of things, yeah, the Cardinals come away with a win. They're at 2-2 now in the season, but like, you saw Cliff and Kyler like screaming at each other on the sideline, like when things weren't working. Like, I do not think that Cliff is long for being the head coach in Arizona. I understand that 7 months ago, both he and Steve Keim signed extensions, but I mean, that money is, and those contracts are imaginary to me. Like you're paying them no matter what. So would you rather just pay to continue to be bad? Because Connor, we talked about it last week. Cliff Kingsbury's thing is starting off hot. They stink. Like this, the team stinks. The team still stinks. So it's my big takeaway, man, is that I think they're under new management and I think they're under new coaching staff next year.
Well, the thing is they should be, right? I don't know if they will be for financial reasons or you're right. I'm watching the clip right now of Kyler and Cliff, and you know, this was all a big plan together here. And it doesn't seem, I know we're talking about this after a win, but I have a lot of questions about Arizona. I get, and maybe that's biased because they're our regression team and they did win here. The Panthers, it's not even questions. We know the answers. Like this can't go onward with Matt Rhule. They do not have a functioning offense. They have all the skill talent in the world, it feels like. You're right. And Trevor, to your point, you know, you said that they tried to bargain shop with Darnold and Baker and they drafted Corral, who had bad luck injury. The Darnold decision, especially when you watch the behind the scenes of their video series when they make that trade, they gave up a second, a fourth, and a sixth, and paid him on that fifth-year option a good amount of money. They really believed that Darnold was their franchise guy, and it didn't work out that first year. They got another crack by getting Baker and also drafting Corral. The Corral injury is its own thing. But I just think, you know, are you really giving this group the next guy? Like, are you just going to keep letting them take their cracks over and over again? I personally find that very hard to believe.
I love where the defense is going. I do. So we'll end on a positive note.
Yeah, Phil Snow's done a good job.
Love where the defense is going. I do. It's just, you got to be under new leadership. You got to be under new offensive tutelage. Somebody else has got to play quarterback for you. So Carolina, I know things look bleak right now, but what are they? 1-3? Is that what they are?
They're 1-3, yes.
They can't be better than that. They're 1-3. Panthers fans, honestly, you've got to be hoping for losses. Like, you've got to be hoping for Bryce Young or CJ Stroud.
I would say you want Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. Like, this isn't even up for debate. And we'll close the book here because I know we're running long on maybe my least favorite game of the entire Sunday somehow, which tends to happen.
Yes.
You got the Niners, the Rams, Bucks, the Falcons, who look very capable right now. Like, this isn't some... There's not a lot of win, like no-brainer wins on the schedule for the Panthers right now. So that's good.
Let's talk about the Colts. I mentioned teams that are going bargain shopping for quarterbacks. I don't have a ton to say about this game. Tennessee Titans ended up winning this one 24-17 over the Colts. Colts dropped to 1-2-1. It's kind of a goddamn miracle that they even have that one win. If we're being honest, this is I think One of the worst teams in the NFL. I don't know how else to say it. Like, this is a team that on paper you should absolutely believe in, but I don't. And the reason why I don't is because of Matt Ryan, and it's because of this offensive line. Matt Ryan's got 3 fumbles lost already this season. His career high in a single year is 5. And guess what? That was last year. So it's not trending in the right direction for Matt Ryan. He's not as pinpoint accurate as he used to be. He's got 5 interceptions already this year, which is on pace to be a career high that he has ever had, getting 20 for the first time in his career. And I think accuracy also goes into that. The Matt Ryan bargain shop, I did not think that he was going to plummet off a cliff this hard.
Not like this.
But here we are, man. He's turning the ball over. He's not accurate the way that he needs to be. It's just not good. And then when you look at the Colts offensive line as well, they've got a 65.3 offensive line grade for this season. They were 79.4 last year. That's almost a 15-point grade jump. That's a lot. That's bad. That's a serious dip. They're 30th in the NFL in pass block win rate. This is the highest paid offensive line in the NFL, and they cannot protect Matt Ryan to truly save their lives or save Matt Ryan's career, it seems like, because I don't know if Ryan is seeing ghosts. But the ball is not going where it needs to be. And in fact, it's going to the other team where it's on the turf a lot more than it has ever been in Matt Ryan's career. And I got to think the offensive line is a decent amount to blame there. They also get, they can't get the ball to Nyheim Hines, which is so crazy to me as well.
It's crazy to me.
It's just, I don't believe in this Colts team, man. You and I have talked about head coaches and who's going to get fired first and all that. I still don't think that Frank Reich's going to be the first head coach fired. It'd be weird for the Colts to fire a coach in the middle of the season. So I'm still skeptical of that, but
yeah,
holy cow, man,
that.
It is just not a well coached team right now. It is not. This team could easily still be winless. And it's not looking good in Indianapolis. So that is my biggest takeaway there. As a draft podcast, the Colts are going to be a team that we're going to talk about often in the draft.
For me, Trevor, I look at it like this. I think we know that this is probably a one-and-done year for Matt Ryan in Indy. Mm-hmm. And let's assume, because I think they will keep Chris Ballard, who is a really good GM. It's just the quarterback decision is just an endless cycle right now. And as I look at this, Matt Ryan does have a lot of money on the books next year. A lot of money. Maybe there's a way around this, but it looks like an $18 million dead hit. I mean, I just don't know what the answer is. What my one Titans takeaway, before I forget, I thought Derrick Henry looked like himself again for the first time this
looks
year. Derrick Henry looked fast. He looked explosive. They got him that train rolling down the tracks. Loved how Derrick Henry looked. Titans are 2-2. They had their backs against the wall. Big news for the Titans winning this game decisively. One final note on the Colts before we move on. Yeah, they just have hit a total roadblock at quarterback because they don't ever have the draft capital to get these premium guys. Now, are they going to go, are you going to try to trade for Derek Carr or Kirk Cousins? I'm saying names that hypothetically could hit the market. What do you do at this point if you're the Colts? It's so hard because they're never bad enough that it's like, hey, we got a top 5 pick. Here's our guy. Right? Like, sometimes it's good to be that bad.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answer to that question. It's just a question that I'm closing this game on because it's going to be a big part of our draft coverage.
I was going to say, we're going to be answering that question, I think, over the next couple of months.
Give me
here
time.
On this
podcast, I need the answers.
Sure. I was just going to say, we got to talk Jets Steelers and we also got to talk Jaguars Eagles. But before we get to that, got to tell you about our friends over at No House Advantage. They are changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. You can play pick-em contests versus other people for a shot at winning $250,000 in cash. You download the app, you choose a contest, you select your player props, earn points for correct picks, climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every single day. You can also test your skills versus the house and get up to 20 times your entry if you hit all of your picks. You bet on up to 5 player props, over-unders, or individual player matchups across all major sports, including NFL and NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, NASCAR. Sign up now with the promo code STOCK to really help with this podcast if you end up doing that at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app on the App Store and get your first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check in on No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. And you will not want to miss out on this. Also, if you guys don't have the PFF app, now that I'm thinking about it, go check it out. If you got an Apple device, it's the very best PFF right in the palm of your hand. You get the industry-leading fantasy football advice. You get the betting dashboard that we use all the time here on this show. You get all the hard-hitting football analysis after every single week. It's a good time. Whatever you love most about PFF, I guarantee that you're going to be able to find it right in a beautifully, aesthetically pleasing app in the palm of your hand. Go check it out. Go download it if you got an Apple device over at the Apple Store, PFF or Pro Football Focus. Where do you want to go next, Connor? What game do you want to hit?
Washington, Dallas.
Ooh, okay, okay.
I don't have like an overwhelming ton for this game personally. I think my biggest alarming thing is that, one, credit to Dallas for taking care of business without Dak. They really do deserve a lot of credit for that, because I think
Cooper Rush, baby, 4-0 is a starter.
My hand,
never lost. Never
when
lost.
It was, hey, we're going with Cooper Rush, I was like, man, is there really nobody that they could trade for? And then you think about it, there's really not. Nobody's trading their backup quarterbacks right now.
No.
Credit to Dallas where it's due. My other takeaway, which I know you want to lean on as well, Washington's defense stinks. It stinks. And this is a unit that 2 years ago, I was like, man, they could be building one of the best defenses in football. And I know they're dealing with some of their own problems as well in terms of missing players. But Trevor, I don't really think they do anything well, to be honest with you, on defense. I just look at this team and I go, how did we get here with them? I feel like they don't do a lot consistently well. And I think that when you have a quarterback that can hit explosive plays but is also prone to turnovers, it's a really bad combination. And unfortunately for the Commanders, they are now 1-3.
You know, I don't hate what Washington's doing up front. You know, John Allen, Daron Payne,
the
like
talent's
I think
there.
They're good defensive linemen. And so, like, I don't hate the front. I really don't. The secondary is tough for them right now.
Yeah.
The secondary is such an Achilles heel for that defense that, shoot, we thought 2 years ago, we thought on paper this group should have been really good. We went into this year
thinking, some money.
Okay, right, maybe it's going to be a bounce back year for them. You know, I follow Mark Bullock on Twitter. If you guys don't, you really should. And he said this, and I totally agree with it. It feels like there is a conflicting philosophy with how they have their secondary players set up. If they run man coverage concepts, Kendall Fuller is not good at them. He's much more of a off zone. Let me watch the quarterback. Let me bait him. Let me use space to my advantage. So he's much more of a zone guy. And you can tell when he goes man up against players. He had a couple of big plays that he gave up against the Cowboys when he was supposed to be in man, when he was in press man coverage, because he's just not good at it. And then the flip side, if you got Will Jackson's better in man. So if you play him in off coverage, he just doesn't understand that spacing as well. It's not what he's good at. He'd much rather get his hands on guys. So no matter what you're calling, you've got like two different corners with different philosophies of how well they play. And you're trying to play both of those guys. And so I think that that's kind of a crossroads of where they're at. When you look at some more advanced statistics, 0.243 EPA per play given up in the passing game in week 4. Their average for the season is 0.118. Both of those scores, just to put it in a little bit more English, bottom 10 in the NFL. Yeah. So they're not in a good place with either of those. That means they're giving up a lot of bigger plays and a lot of plays that lead to points in coverage in the passing game. Overall, they just have that 59.7 coverage grade as a team. It's just not going to get it done. So they got to figure something out in this secondary. I don't know if it's something that gets fixed this year, because it feels like they've got different kind of corners in there. Maybe they could play them a little bit different. Maybe they can get better at the different kinds of coverage schemes. But that's the way that Mark was seeing it. I thought he did a brilliant job pointing that out on Twitter, because I see that a lot as well. It feels like when one guy is playing strong, the other guy is struggling. Also, I'll just, before we move on, talk about the offense with the Commanders. Started off strong this season. They had 28 and 27 points in the first 2 weeks of the year, and since then they had 8 and 10. It's not good. I mean, they're just not able to move the ball right now. Offensive line's kind of struggling in front of Carson Wentz. They're not really able to block for him very well, but Wentz isn't doing himself any favors as well. He's he seems to be the Carson Wentz of old, the Carson Wentz that we all know and love, that's seeing ghosts, pump faking everywhere, holding onto the ball way too long, and it's not yielding the results that you want. So that's kind of my thoughts on Washington. Anything else before we move on?
No, I think that's where I stand on them as well. And it's just, yeah, it's, you know, I know we're harsh on the defense, but the numbers just speak for themselves. They're just not consistent right now for a unit that I think is much better on paper than what they've shown. So, okay, I do want to move to the most ridiculous game of Sunday. It has to be Lions Seahawks, right? Like, it just has to be Lions Seahawks. If you told somebody over summer that a game that Geno Smith and Jared Goff started would almost tally 100 total points, they would look at you like you need to be put in a psych center. But Geno Smith, 23 for 30, 320, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Jared Goff, 26 for 39, almost 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick. Rashad Penny ran for a gazillion yards. Jamal Williams ran for over 100. Trevor, I will do this both ways. Mm-hmm. One, credit to both of these guys who were entirely written off at one point or another by multiple people, whether it's media, NFL, all this and that. Number two, these defenses are having a hell of a time out there week after week, and this was like, this was the full pinnacle of
hey,
it.
Hey, Tariq Woolen had a pick six. Tariq Woolen had a pick six.
Yeah, I mean, sure. It's just, man, it's crazy to me. Now, Seattle lost Jamal Adams in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, right.
We know the Lions are still building this thing, but it's definitely a struggle in every... I mean, we just kind of crapped on Washington's defense a little bit. This is like a whole new world of that.
1,075 total yards between these two teams today. We got...
It's
we
a track
got,
meet.
We got over a band. We got over 100 on this... or we got over 1,000. In this game, which is pretty, you're right. It was a track meet. Absolutely. Here's a fun
Seahawks,
fact.
Seahawks Lions track meet.
Here's a fun fact. Seahawks did not punt in this game for the first time.
That's amazing.
In franchise history.
That's incredible.
They did not punt in this game. Their possessions went touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, missed field goal, touchdown, end of game. Truly incredible.
It's truly remarkable.
Incredible. My biggest point, my biggest takeaway is that the Lions, you know, I don't think the people really thought the Seahawks would be very good this year. Geno Smith's actually making that offense very enjoyable. Rashad Penny was fantastic. The Seahawks offensive line was bullying the Lions defensive line today, which is kind of crazy to see. I didn't think that I was going to see that. But so I want to credit the Seahawks on offense. They look a lot better than I thought that they were going to. But I do think what matters most in this game is how bad the Lions defense is. This is a bad team now. We are four games into this bad boy. And Connor, I don't know if you knew this, but the Lions have the most points in the NFL right now. The most points scored. They are 1-3. Yeah. They have the most points scored in the NFL, and they are 1-3. They gave up 550 yards of offense to the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle converted 8 of 11 third downs. Went into this game averaging the most points allowed per game and the third most yards. They're going to stay at number one for average points given up per game, and they're probably going to creep a little bit closer to, if not at number one, for most yards given up throughout four games of the season. It's just, it's not good, man. Average depth of tackle, 4.73, which is in the bottom half of the league. That shows you that the defensive line is not holding the point of attack. They're not doing their job up front. They need to get a lot better. I know people are getting on Aiden Hutchinson for feeling like he's been a ghost so far this season outside of the 3-sack game, which, if we're being honest, if you went back and you watched those 3 sacks, they were kind of gifted sacks anyway. So Hutchinson's still figuring it out. The rest of the defensive line's not stepping up the way they need to. Seats getting hot for Aaron Glenn, man.
It is, and I love Aaron Glenn.
I do too, man. He was awesome to be around in the Senior Bowl. I got to chat with him a little bit, got to meet him, and just talk to the rest of the staff. And it's a staff that I'm totally rooting for. I love a lot of the guys on that staff, but you got to get results right now. Detroit does not have results, and you cannot score the most points in the NFL through 4 weeks and be 1-3. You just can't.
No, you can't. My final note in that game, Trevor, I think Penei Sewell will be regarded as the best right tackle in football by the end of the season.
Ooh!
Yeah, he just looks amazing.
That's shots fired at Tristan Wirfs, and so I cannot agree with it.
Tristan Wirfs, who I wished was a New York Jet. Man.
How did Elijah Vera Tucker do at left tackle today?
He held his own. He did not give up a sack or a quarterback hit.
Ooh, nice.
Only him and Elton Jenkins are like the two ultimate like chess pieces of the offensive line. And I think it's the most underappreciated. Like, to be able to play any position on the O-line is just, it's unbelievable.
True talent.
Unbelievable.
Can we talk Jets Steelers now? Can we get into that?
Yeah, good transition.
Okay. All right. Obviously, you got to take it away. Zach Wilson's triumphant return.
Well, I have to watch this game.
They pay me to watch this game.
I literally have to watch this game.
Zach Wilson caught a touchdown in this game from the Milfy special that I saw on Twitter, is what somebody called it.
The Milfy special.
Just.
Shout out to Meegs on Twitter, who said it's the Milfy special. I mean, I will actually be kind of more condensed with this game. My most important thing, because that is the point of this exercise, and I feel like I talk about 8 different things from each game. My most important thing is that Zach Wilson had a really tough middle of the game, and with 2-minute drill, game on the line. He went 5 for 5 for 57 yards down the field flawlessly with a makeshift offensive line. And guys are going to believe in that going forward. He won the game. He said, let's go effing score. He went down the field and won the game. And for everybody that got their Zach Wilson jokes off in the second and third quarter, which is, I get it. Everybody's got to get their likes and retweets. It was pretty cool to see. And Pittsburgh has their own problems this year. They are really struggling in a lot of areas. They moved to Kenny Pickett. It didn't work out through the whole game. But you go on the road in Pittsburgh, you went in a tough place. Your first game back from a pretty tough knee injury. It's a massive, massive step in the right direction for Zach Wilson.
Yeah, midway through the game, his stats were super unimpressive.
Oh, but then, you know, going nowhere.
You're right. You look at it at the end of the game and you go, okay, not bad. Not bad there. Building blocks there, which you love to see from the Jets. On the other side of things, Kenny Pickett, the spark that he gave that team when he came in the game, I know the results were not what you wanted, right? He throws 0 touchdowns. He throws 3 interceptions. Not great. But you could feel things were different when he came into the game.
Crowd went too, ballistic.
Like, yeah, not to get like too like emotional and like, you know, intangible with it, but they weren't going anywhere with Trubisky. Like it was never going to get better with Trubisky. And we have said this before on the show, the next 4 games for the Steelers, Bills, Bucks, Dolphins, and then it's the Eagles, and then it's the bye week, and then it's the Saints. So like it gets really difficult for the Steelers over the next 6 weeks of football. Do you want to throw a rookie quarterback to that? No. Probably not.
Tomlin didn't commit to him after the game.
And I know that he didn't, probably because
which is weird.
Yeah, but he still wants to hold that card. Like, if he truly does not think it is smart to send Kenny to the Wolves, then he's not going to play him.
Yeah.
But it's going to be really hard for him to do that, given how crazy, like you said, the stadium went and how different it felt when Kenny was in the game, even with Kenny not really doing a lot. He had the 2 rushing touchdowns, but those were easy. They were right on the goal line.
He did activate George Pickens. If you want
to
say anything good about it, he did.
He
hit the back shoulder ball to him. He really did activate George Pickens. So that's the one, like, that's something that should be very promising to Steelers fans with Pickett if they could take something away like that.
So that's my one thing that mattered most is you could just feel things were different when Kenny Pickett was in the game. Even with me not having the most confidence in Pickett really being able to totally change the Steelers offense the way that it is currently constructed, behind the offensive line the way that it is currently constructed, it was a different feel. And it's really hard to win football games when your roster, specifically your offense, is just in purgatory, when there is so much not really no fire. I mean, we don't really love the guy who's leading us. Like, it's so hard to win in the NFL anyways. It's extremely hard when you're not playing with the team that you really want to fight for. And I guess I shouldn't say that. I don't want to speak for guys. Maybe they would fight for Mitch Trubisky, but it just felt like it was different when Kenny was in the game. So that was my big takeaway there. Let's move on. Let's go to the next game. Let's
want to close about, the book on New York football here?
Yeah, sure. We'll go Giants Bears.
Giants yeah, this one
huge dub. Huge dub.
Giants are 3-1.
3-1, baby. Wait, was this the other team that was the least inspiring 3-1 team when you were talking about the Vikings?
You know what, though, for the Giants, I want to say this. The Giants look like a really well-coached football team. Like, that's why I do want to pull that back. I don't know if it's fair to call them uninspiring because of the Giants' future is, in my opinion, not necessarily Daniel Jones. It's not necessarily a lot of the guys Dave Gettleman paid bad contracts to. It's the guys they hired. And the guys they hired are doing the best with what they have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
My quick takeaway, Trevor, I only have one big on this one besides that, is Saquon Barkley looks like one of the best skill players in football. And it's great for football that Saquon Barkley looks like that. I'm fascinated to see how the Giants handle that in the offseason with him. But Saquon Barkley is having a hell of a bounce back year, and it's amazing to watch.
RB1 right now in the NFL had 31 carries today, 146 yards on the ground.
He had to at the end. They had no quarterbacks.
Yeah, broke for height that, which was nuts. Daniel Jones gets hurt, Tyrod Taylor gets hurt, and they go, Saquon, just go be Wildcat. Had 4 broken tackles. On the runs in which he had broken tackles, he had 94 yards after contact, which is a 3.4 yards per carry average on the day.
Saquon's two guys not allowed to throw back, the baby. Ball. Justin Fields and Saquon Barkley, a quarterback in this game.
Dude.
It got better for Fields on that front.
You know, it's Giants are 3-1. Congratulations. It's tough to win in the NFL. Don't mean to take anything away from you there. Again, I have to sit here and say that the thing that mattered most is what's going on in Chicago, because it absolutely is. Because, you know, we all thought that they had potentially a franchise quarterback. And even though things were going great in the coaching staff when it was Matt Nagy, you said to yourself, okay, well, they can survive this because they got the franchise quarterback in place. Matt Eberflus is the guy there now. Luke Getsy, I think is how you say his name, an offensive coordinator. It's just whatever he's doing is not working, man. It's just not working. The O-line's a problem. The O-line's a massive problem for this team. So I don't know how much progression we're getting from Fields.
It's probably
anyways.
The root of the problems, right?
I mean, Fields is also a problem himself, but yeah. It's kind of
six
like the
sacks.
It's kind of like the chicken or the egg, but it doesn't really matter,
yes.
Right? Because
it's a good way of putting it.
Fields has taken 16 sacks through four games, which is tied for the second most by a Bear in that stretch since the 1970 merger. Love a stat that starts with since the merger, trailing only Jay Cutler in 2010 when he had 17. Courtney Cronin tweeted that out, so I wanted to make sure that I gave her a shout out for that, because O-line allowed six sacks today. You're right. This team hasn't had a passing touchdown in three games, Connor.
In this NFL?
You can't. What game were we just talking about where it's like, it was the Falcons. No, it was the Falcons game. No, it was the Falcons game where I was like, you are not going to be able to beat teams throwing the ball or completing seven passes, right? You're not going to be able to beat teams
when Kyle Pitts
gets two catches. You're not going to be able to beat teams when Drake London gets two catches. You can sit here and be like, hey, we won the game by running for over 200 yards. That's cool. It's just not going to beat the best teams in the NFL. It's just straight up not going to. And it's certainly not going to be the case with the Chicago Bears roster the way it is constructed now. So Chicago's in a bad place, man. They're a really bad place. The offensive line's bad. Fields has zero confidence when he's passing the football. His offensive coordinator clearly doesn't have faith in him to really open things up. It's just a mess all around. So that was my biggest takeaway from that.
All right. Jacksonville and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
A game where, you know, Trevor Lawrence had some fumbles. He had the interception. You know, Lawrence has been really, really good this year. It was his first real, like, okay, he's out there struggling. He's going against a great team. Jalen Hurts didn't have to be a superhero through the air in this game. Overall, my takeaway is Jacksonville showed that they're going to be in every game this year despite losing in this one. I thought their defense has a lot of fight. I think as a team, they have a lot of fight. It felt like everything was going against them in this game, and they still hung around against Philadelphia. So the Eagles are just really good. We say that every week. I don't really have much of a takeaway from them. For me, it's just that Jacksonville is going to be a sustainable problem going forward, despite losing and having a tough go of it at quarterback.
It's hard to not look at this Eagles team and – well, I should start that over. It's hard to look at this Eagles team and not have faith in them.
Yeah.
When you look at the first three games and how they won all of those games in different ways, today, what happened? Yeah, they were at home. Okay, so you could be like, okay, they were at home. But the weather was awful.
Yep.
It was pouring the entire game. Jacksonville gets off to a 14-0 lead, which came from seven of those points came off of a turnover, Jalen Hurts interception that he threw, which you could say like, oh, you know, it bounced off the defender. Yeah, but it should have been picked off anyways because Jalen was so late on the throw. And yet, what happened, Connor? They rebounded. They stayed calm. They stayed cool. They stayed confident. They executed. They end up winning this game 29-21. This team is really damn good. And I think specifically we talk about the Eagles offense a lot. This Eagles defense is playing well enough to where the Eagles can run the offense exactly the way they want to. This is not going to be a vertical passing offense. It's just not. They're not going to push the ball down the field. Jalen Hurts isn't going to be launching it every single drive, no matter what. They're going to be, when I say dink and dunk down the field, it makes it sound like it's a bad thing. Like I'm oversimplifying things, but it's just going to be a lot of shorter passes. It's going to be a lot of read options. It's going to be a lot of multiple threats on every single play. And that's how they're going to move the ball. They're going to be methodical. They're not going to be this team that has massive chunk play. Now we're in scoring range. No, I think it's going to be longer, sustained drives. They're going to be in control. And because of that, I think they're going to take care of the football really well all year long. And they're allowed to do that because their defense controls what other offenses are doing so well. And because of that, Connor, the defense is doing exactly what they need to, and they're being really efficient about it. And if the offense is in the same exact kind of boat, staying versatile, staying multiple, executing where they need to, having a great leader at quarterback who they're putting in a great position at all times with good weapons around him, guess what? Nick Sirianni's right there in the top three for coach of the year. Maybe he's the favorite at this point for coach of the year. for what Philadelphia is doing, how they are able to win. That is my what matters most. This is a complete team. They had less than ideal circumstances, both with the weather and with an early double-digit, double-score deficit. And you know what? They didn't panic. They played their game, and they won in the end. I loved seeing that from Philadelphia. That was my biggest takeaway.
I like it. All right, the last of our 1 o'clocks here. We did dip into one of the 4 p.m.s, but the last of the 1 o'clocks here, the Chargers against the Texans. The score ended up Chargers 34, Texans 24. My quick one here, Trevor, and it's good to see them actually embracing that this week, is that the Texans just need to lean on Dameon Pierce because they just don't have enough talent as a whole to get too cute with that. Lean on Dameon Pierce. He had all 14 of their carries, 131 yards, and the touchdown averaged almost 10 yards a carry. Listen, the Chargers took care of business today. Herbert, a very, very efficient game, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. Wildly efficient. Austin Eckler got back on the total fantasy radar as people seem to be panicking about him all the time. He had 3 touchdowns. But my takeaway is that the Texans, they're still kind of far away. We know they're rebuilding. They're 0-3-1. They're going to be the team that gets that Bryce Young, CJ Stroud treatment over and over again until they're not in that territory. And it looks like they very well could finish in that territory. Mm-hmm. So during this very tough year they're going to have to go through, they're going to have to lean on Pierce. And the bright side of this bad game for them was that they did.
No other back got a carry today. It's just Dameon. 14 carries. Rex Burkhead got involved in the passing game, but it was only Dameon Pierce who got carries out of the backfield. So they're going to lean on him a ton. You love to see that. On the flip side of things for the Chargers, I'll just say that this is obviously the team that has the playoff aspirations, that has Super Bowl aspirations still. It's going to be tough, given all the injuries that they have, for them to beat the teams that they should beat in a manner in which they should beat them, right? There's going to be a lot of teams like the Texans today, right? They clearly had this game in the bag at the early parts of the game. They were winning by, I think, more than 20 when this game went to halftime. And what happened? Well, they let the Texans back into it. And I just don't think they're going to be as dominant as they could be with all the injuries they have. So unfortunately, that might mean that they'll probably slip up here and there, maybe get an extra loss or two because they're not able to put teams away that they the way that you need to in this league to secure wins. So that's the tough part for me. I agree with you. I think the biggest takeaway is the Texans are leaning on Dameon Pierce, which you love to see. Defense clearly wasn't good enough on that side of the ball, but defense is up and down anyways. But then for the Chargers, it's just going to be a struggle every week. You're going to be in close games every single week. You're going to be in nervous games. You're going to be sweating a lot. Make sure you hydrate. Get an extra bottle of water in there before it kicks off if you're a Chargers fan, because you're going to be nervous every single week. That's my takeaway there. What's next?
Patriots-Packers, a really strange game.
Okay.
Yeah, a really, really strange game. The Patriots lose Brian Hoyer very early. Mm-hmm. They were already down Mac Jones. Billy Zappi comes in, does enough to keep them around the game. Kind of strange. I'm really still shocked that Green Bay didn't run away with this one. My what matters most is that I'm really torn on this one, personally. I think... what matters most to me is I can't figure out, and maybe it's because they were banged up in the secondary. I know Jaire didn't play in this game, but Trevor, is this weird to say about a 3-1 team? I feel like Green Bay is better than what they've shown so far. Like, I can't get over that Green Bay, who was a 10-point favorite in this game against Bailey Zappi, went into overtime with New England. And I don't know what the exact answer is of why they are not putting away opponents like these. New England is very well coached. They play hard defense. They can run the ball. We saw Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson combine for, I think, over 150 yards today on the ground. Mm-hmm. But you know that if Bailey Zappi's back there, right? So maybe this will speak more about the Patriots in a couple weeks. Maybe this is just who they are. They're grinding out teams no matter who's back there. But I want more from Green Bay right now, who I have such high expectations for. And I know they're still feeling out the wide receiver situation. Romeo Doubs had a big touchdown catch at the end after having a slow start to the day. Lazard went over 100 yards. But there's just something missing with this Green Bay team right now from them being the cream of the crop in the NFC that we expect them to be.
Yeah, until they figure it out at wide receiver, I don't think they're going to be the Packers that we in our minds all believe the Packers are to be. Dobbs had a great game. Shoot, I think Lazard had a great game. Cobb had a really, really clutch catch, right? But there were, even within those things, you can notice moments where Rodgers is missing Christian Watson because he's probably not where he's supposed to be on a deep fade going towards the sideline. Or Romeo Doubs dropping what should have been, I think that would have been the game-winning touchdown where he lets it go straight into his arms and he corrals it, but he just can't survive the ground and he can't bring that thing in. So it's just there were moments throughout the game where you go, Green Bay wide receivers are still putting up some stats, but what matters more to me is there were still more moments throughout the game where they left meat on the bone, where Rodgers put it where it needed to be. And in those moments where we would have seen him throw the ball to Davante Adams and it be these clear catches and clear touchdowns, they do not have that. And I know it's a giant dub, but that is still a takeaway. Again, the Packers defense did not play the way that they needed to. But on the flip side, I will say that Matt Patricia called a pretty good game as the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. He really
protected his quarterback,
especially given the fact that they were playing Bailey Zappe, yes, quarterback.
And that's a good
look,
point.
Matt Patricia is a punching bag, right? Especially for how he ran things in Detroit. A lot of people like to go after him, and some of it's probably warranted. But Matt Patricia's calling offensive plays and is an the offensive line coach and senior football advisor, right? So he's on the offensive side of the ball for the Patriots, also as the play caller. For the first time since 2005, when he was the offensive line coach for the Patriots, and he was an offensive assistant a little bit before that. Then he switched over to the defense. He was a linebackers coach. He was a safeties coach. He was a defensive coordinator before he ended up being the head coach of Detroit. So I don't know, man. I just think that he's still figuring it out, and I thought he put a really good game plan together. It's hard to judge the Patriots for anything because you could tell that they told Bailey Zappe, brother, just don't throw a pick. Like, we don't care what you do. Do not fumble the ball. Do not throw a pick. If you even think you're getting pressured, go down. There were a couple of plays that were hilarious because Bailey Zappe was already giving himself up, falling to the ground before the defender even cleanly beat the offensive tackle who was close to him. So it's hard to judge the Patriots in that way, but I would say the big storyline for me after watching that game is that until Rodgers gets really comfortable with his wide receivers, or if that happens this year, there is always going to be a little bit holding the Packers back from what that offense could be or what we have seen from an Aaron Rodgers-led offense in the past. So last game is the Denver Broncos and the Broncos. Raiders get off the schneid. They get the win. There's no more winless teams in the NFL. They're now 1-3, 32-23.
No, there is a winless team in the NFL, the Houston Texans.
Oh, you're right. You're correct.
0-3-1.
0-3-1. You're correct. Yes. All right, what did you think about this one, Raiders and Broncos?
I think the Raiders are just too talented to go on that kind of skid, right? Where I couldn't believe they went 0-3. So I'm not surprised they were super competitive today. And, you know, obviously were pretty consistent. They went up at they were up at halftime 17-16. They did what they had to do in the second half. They got Josh Jacobs going. That was the most important thing to me, is if Josh Jacobs, who was playing in the Hall of Fame game for some reason and felt like he was entirely written off, I'll never forget that as long as I live.
If
they can get Josh Jacobs going and not have Carr having to be such a hero all the time, and, you know, Davante Adams is going to get his targets in this offense, right? I don't really understand what's going on with Darren Waller. I will have to go back and watch this game to understand why it's been such a slow start to the year for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Matt Collins had another day where he got 3 catches for 33 yards. He's kind of come out of nowhere to at least be somewhat effective. But the balance for the Raiders is what was most important to me, Trevor. The fact that they gave Jacobs the ball almost 30 times, he had 144 yards and 2 touchdowns. This is going to lead to a much more efficient version of their offense under Josh McDaniels in the long term.
Yeah, and on the flip side, the Denver Broncos didn't have it, right? Javonte Williams, before he got hurt and went out, ten carries, 28 yards. Melvin Gordon had 3 carries and 8 yards, but he also had a crucial fumble in which Robertson picked up and scooped and scored. So that was huge. It was a massive swing in that game. And when you look at the passing stats, KJ Hamler led the Broncos in receiving with 55 yards. That came off of one pass. It came from a beautiful vintage Russell Wilson moon ball. But outside of that, they were not there was nothing dynamic about what the Broncos were doing on offense. So it's tough to really look at what they had and think that there was both balance and efficiency of what you wanted to do and how you wanted to be dynamic moving the ball down the field. It was just a straight up slow game for the Broncos. I don't think there was anything to really point the finger at here with them other than they're going to be up and down this year. And this was a down game for them. And I agree. I think the bigger point was the Raiders were too talented to not pick up a win soon. this wasn't a team that you were going to see threatened to be like 0-7, 0-8, whatever, like we have seen in years past. They were going to get a win at some point soon. This could be a catalyst a little bit moving forward. But yeah, that was my big takeaway from it is, it's kind of the same things as you. It was great to see Josh Jacobs have as much success as he did. I don't even think Derek Carr had 200 yards today, did he?
He didn't. I think he had 188.
21 for 34, 188. Yeah, and yeah. They scored 30 points. Obviously, the scoop and score definitely helps, but this was always going to be a weird game. This is always going to be a super weird game, but the Raiders get the win. We figured that would be the case. All right.
I think that wraps up the Sunday.
Wraps it up. Like a Christmas present. You know.
Yeah, something like that.
Because it's October 3rd, which means it's Christmas season, baby. I got the tree right there to prove it. I got the tree right there.
Well, that was more of a, hey, I don't feel like putting this away yet, so I will stay out of here, which I respect.
Don't make me plug it in. Don't make me turn the lights
on. That's fair.
I'll turn the lights on.
November 1st. November 1st, the lights can come on.
All right. Man.
Got a stock watch coming this week, as always. We'll do something ridiculous for Thursday's show. We're back on the ridiculousness for the Thursdays.
We are.
But overall, maybe Tuesday we'll talk a little bit since the Bucks are playing a huge game against the Chiefs. We'll talk a little Bucks Chiefs kickoff the stock watch as well, potentially.
Yeah, I saw that they already fumbled the opening kickoff to start this game while we were recording this podcast. So sick!
Football, baby.
You love to see that.
All
right, appreciate everybody listening, everybody watching on YouTube. You guys have thoughts on what you saw from your team or other teams? Let us know in the YouTube comments or tweet at us at Tampa Bay Trey, at Karn J. Rogers. We would love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you after tomorrow's podcast as well. Wait, not tomorrow's podcast. I forgot. We changed the schedule. So the stock watch comes out on Wednesday.
Wednesday stock watch.
Comes out on Wednesday.
Which is better for the people. We get more film time. You get better takes. Everybody wins.
What a better way to end the podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers. Thank you guys so much for watching the NFL Stock Exchange. We will see you on Wednesday after more film and more takes. We'll see you then.